This Week in Radio Tech is supported by Telos Systems, the best way to hear from there. On the web at telos-systems.com. And by Violet Microphones at violetusa.com.
And now, our feature presentation.
Twirt.
That just makes my... Oh, I get so excited. There are a lot of people who hate it, you know, just because of the thought of it or whatever, but...
All right, calm down. He says that to everyone.
This calls for immediate discussion.
What's up?
Yeah, all your days are belong to us.
From his palatial office of important business.
Or in a choice hotel in a distant land.
This is Kirk Harnack.
It's Twirt, episode 19, Total FUBAR. With special guest David Bialik from New York.
You're dialed in to This Week in Radio Tech.
Hey, it's time for This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, and welcome into our show. This show is about radio technology. It's about audio. It's about how to hook up the microphone, the audio console, what makes transmitters run. We got to talk about that one day because we keep promoting it. And audio processing and how radio technology infiltrates the internet or maybe vice versa. So welcome into our show. This is show number 19. And with us today, our usual partners in crime, including Tom Ray. Hello, Tom.
Smoke. That's what makes transmitters run. When the smoke comes out, they don't work anymore. Hey, Kirk.
Hey, how you doing? We'll get your complete report on smoke and transmitters. In that should be an episode right there. Smoke and
it really should.
Tom Ray from New York, also from New York, joining us is Chris Tobin. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Kirk. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Chris.
Did you guys make it through the snow?
Oh, yes. Actually, if you look out the windows today, there's barely any snow on the sidewalk or streets.
Oh, I know. However, I was out in Rutherford today, Chris, and there's about a foot out there.
Yes, I will say the suburbs definitely have some accumulations to speak of.
During the pre-show, before the show, one of you guys was talking about somebody that had 4 feet of snow.
That was me. It's Chris here in New York. Actually, I have friends in just outside of Philadelphia, near the Delaware, Philadelphia border. And they called me up and said, well, we got a lot of snow. I said, how much? Approximately 4 feet. I went out the back porch and fell, and all you saw was a puff of cloud of snow. And my wife was like, honey, where are you? And I wish I had a picture. It was just wild.
Oh, man. Well, Tom is with the folks at WOR and Buckley Broadcasting. So, Tom, there's your disclaimer right there.
Thank you, sir.
And Chris's financial interest lies with his paychecks that come from CBS Radio.
That's right. So 6 radio stations in New York City.
All right. And Chris Tarr joins us from the frozen Midwestern Northland of Milwaukee.
Yeah, all you people complaining about the snow. Come on. Man up,
right,
Nancy.
Fine.
Man up.
You know what, Chris? Next time, you can keep the snow out there, okay?
You know, we get well over 100 inches of snow a year. Man up! That's all I have to say. Man up.
Also joining us for the entire show, we have a special guest with us, and that is Mr. David Bialik, also from the New York area. Hi, David.
Hi, Kirk. Hey, hi, Tom. Hi, Chris.
Hey, David.
Chris.
How are you?
Thanks for joining us. And David, since our listeners have not met you before, why don't you give us a couple of sentences about David Bialik?
Well, I'm a systems engineering consultant. I was chief engineer of a few radio stations in New York, and I've been in the industry since the early 80s. And I've also been chair of the broadcast and streaming sessions of the Audio Engineering Society for the last 22 years.
Cool. Well, I know you just had an AES convention in New York, last October, right?
Yes, we did. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I was very happy to have your boss speak there.
Oh, which one? I have several. You mean my wife was there, and she's
nice.
No, forgive me, his name escapes me right now.
Was it Steve or Mike?
Steve.
Oh,
Steve was there.
Yes,
Steve was there. Marty
Sachs
was there. And also Frank was there.
Yeah.
And also Tim was there.
In fact, I remember. I went to the AES. I didn't have a chance to look through many of the exhibits, but I went there to meet Steve, who I hadn't seen in about a year, and Skip Peasy. Together, they co-authored a book called IP Audio.
You know, I got a copy of that today.
Oh, good. Well,
you know, that title just really says a lot about the way management feels about engineers. They just pee on audio.
I'm waiting for the movie to come out before I...
So I'm walking over to the Jacob Javits Center from whatever subway stop brought me somewhere near there, and I'm walking there. I'm walking across the street. What is the street that goes in front of Javits? Is it?
What is that, 11th?
That's 11th. I think 11th Avenue.
Yeah,
11th. Okay, so I'm walking across 11th. Of course, I'm jaywalking. You know, I'm dodging cabs, and I look up.
And they actually like missed you.
Well, I dodged them. So
playing froggy.
I look up, and who's coming across the street the other direction? But Frank Foti. And
who
Frank,
I did not recognize this year. The man really has lost a lot of weight, and he looks great now.
And lost a lot of weight and a lot of hair.
Yeah, I noticed
now,
that.
Now, the hair was on purpose. He cut that off.
Correct.
And the weight was on purpose, too, I suppose. He lost that. So I'm walking across the street, and Frank Foti has this bear hug thing. So right in the middle of 11th Avenue, I get bear hugged, and Frank lifts me up off the ground. Hey, how you doing there, Harnack? Good to see you. Oh, gosh. Well, so I went on inside.
Only in New York.
Yeah, only in New York. Saw Steve and Skip at their book signing. That's what they were doing, that book signing. Hey, we should do a giveaway on the show. We should give away one of Steve's books. I might be able to arrange that.
You could probably even arrange to get it autographed.
That's a possibility, too.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. So, we have a potpourri show today, and that is we'll be talking about a variety of subjects, some topical things in the news. By the way, I want to let our listeners know right now that next week starts something very cool. Next week, This Week in Radio Tech officially becomes a part of the TWIT network, the This Week in Tech network at twit.tv. We're going to be live video streaming on the TWIT network. You can see that at live.twit.tv, where Leo Laporte and his crew have all of their podcasts on video. This podcast will at first be rather ephemeral on that network. In other words, we'll be live on the video stream, but we will not have any recorded versions publicly available. Now, they'll go ahead and record them, but for the time being, they won't be publicly available. And if our podcast is popular enough, then they'll make it available. They'll make old issues or old copies available, perhaps someday even on the Roku player, or the Xbox 360. So you'll be able to watch them later if the show is popular enough. So
does it mean I have to start wearing pants then?
Yeah,
because I really was
depends on
enjoying
how
not having to.
Your lens is.
And I have a question too.
I've got a powerful zoom. You know, that's all I'm saying.
Kirk, are we going to be held liable for people going blind?
I cannot unsee what has been seen.
Scorched
retinas. I bleach.
Well, thank goodness the show.
This is why radio is an audible medium only.
Yeah.
Thank goodness the show isn't This Week in Fashion or This Week in Beautiful People.
This Week in the Face and Radio.
Yeah. Well, we will get to do a few things on the video stream. We'll be able to show pictures if there's some, you know, pictures of transmitter sites or some studios that you want to show or some techniques for building something.
We'll I got some pictures you can show.
Yeah.
Oh. Hey, that's the other episode.
Oh. We're taking that ability away from Tom Ray because we have potential for abuse there.
And to think that Tom is the backup host on weeks that I won't be available live on Wednesday.
God helps us.
Yeah, Tom is the backup. He's the first officer.
So he did like the swearing in or something? Was there some like kind of Bible thing or what was going on? So do we have like a little meeting and then he gets sworn in if something happens to Kirk? What's the deal?
So you two can't be on the same plane together or anything?
No, that's right.
Yeah, we got old Haig over there in New York. I'm in charge now.
So anyway, mark it on your calendars or forget it if you like, but we'll be on the TWIT network and very happily part of the TWIT family. Thanks to Leo Laporte and Colleen and Dane for helping to make that happen. Well, guys, let's talk about some topical news in the radio biz, and then finally we'll get around toward the third half of our show to what David Bialik has to say about AES. He'll also have an invitation to broadcast engineers near the end of our show, so stay tuned for his invitation. Some radio stations are cranking up the juice on their HD radio. Seems like we talked about this with Hal Neller a few episodes ago. Hal from Nautel. And also, maybe we talked about this with Skip Peasy as well, going up in power on the HD and what that's going to do. So, well, Chris Tobin, you're pretty well involved with HD on the FM band, which is where this power increase applies. What can you tell us about this power increase and the fact that some stations are doing it?
Well, one thing, it will help those who need in-building penetration. We, from what we've learned and read, building penetration is key. For folks that are farther out, say in the suburbs where you have terrain issues not as much, or the buildings are pretty much equal in size, it'll definitely reinforce what you have. But in cities like New York, or they say for San Francisco, Chicago, I think you'll see a huge improvement in your ability to receive the HD signals on portables as well as in the mobile environment. At least from what we've seen, we're looking forward to implementing it here in New York. I think we're still waiting for our STAs to show up before we can do it.
So you have to apply for a special temporary authority or an STA, right?
That is my understanding, yes.
Yeah. Chris, is...
I mean, I'm sure you can do it, but that's not going to be nice. Yes, Dave?
Is anybody going to be needing new equipment for this, or can the current equipment support the increase?
It's hard to say. I mean... our facilities have the ability to do, because we planned for it in the upgrades that we've done. It all depends on your plant. I mean, some folks do have the headroom, others don't. And since we're on a master antenna system, I think our system is designed with the headroom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so some folks have it already built in. Others will have to probably make an investment.
Yeah, in my case, I'm using high-level combining, and, you know, my transmitter will only go, I'm only going to be able to go up about 100 watts before I'm done. So if I change, I'm gonna have to do a different combiner or do a whole different method of combining to get that power output.
And in our station in Hartford, we're gonna change over and put the HD transmitter on the auxiliary antenna. And then I've got all the power I need out of that transmitter. Otherwise, I'd have to either change transmitters or change out the combiner.
Oh, so you do it with a combiner now, Tom, at your Hartford station.
Correct.
And by getting rid of the combiner, you gain back, what, 7 or 9 dB of power?
Actually, you gain back 10 dB of power,
oh,
but we're limited to minus 14s.
Yeah.
But still, you know, it's...
Hey, Tom, did you look into or have you modeled those two antennas to see if they match? Because I know some people were talking about that, using a split antenna system where the nulls of the main and the aux antennas actually don't match. As you drive down the road, the digital all of a sudden obliterates the analog, and vice versa as you go down if the nulls don't match.
Well, we talked to Ubiquiti, and the antennas themselves, the only real difference between the two antennas is that one is designed for a higher power input than the other. And it was put up there actually to accommodate the HD. We've already calculated where the nulls fall, and I pretty much know where the nulls fall, which is right around the base of the mountain, which there ain't too many people there. So, we're gonna give it a try and see what it does. We may have to do something else. You know,
yeah, it was an interesting story because I stationed here in town with a dual antenna system, and they actually ended up having to go back and readjust and remodel their auxiliary antenna because that's exactly what happened. You drive down the street, as you get farther away from the transmitter, you have these valleys where all of a sudden the analog would just be just buried by the digital signal and vice versa. And, you know, they were almost alternating nulls. And it took a long time to get that straightened out. And it was just one of those things that never really occurred to a lot of people until they did it. I went, oh, that's a problem.
You know, Ubiquiti didn't seem to think it would be that much of a deal for us, especially with the type of antenna we have and such. But, hey, we'll find out. You know, we're going to find out.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of interesting things. You know, Nautel has their power boost technology that's, you know, going to give you at least a dB or two extra out of existing transmitters. Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But there's a lot of us kind of scrambling because especially the early adopters like me, I mean, I've been on HD for 3-4 years now. You know, high level combining at that power level was really the only option back when I put these in. So I have, you know, I'm going into this combiner or the HD injector, and I'm running, you know, 1,700 watts to get 175 watts out the other end. And, you know, there's not a lot more I can get out of that thing. And so really, if I want to do the full upgrade, I'm looking at probably a new low-level combined, like a Continental or a Nautel, you know, NV40 or something.
Chris Tarr,
to do that.
Would you take a minute and explain for our listeners why you lose 90% of your power from the HD transmitter. So tell us kind of what's the purpose of high-level combining. What does that mean? And then why does this combining not result in 100% of the power from both transmitters, going to the antenna?
Well, honestly, I'm not real up on the physics that are involved in that, but in order to combine those two signals and keep them together, there's three different ways to combine your HD system. Low level, where the two digital analog are generated at the exciter level and amplified through the entire system in one transmitter. And then there's the space combining, which is Tom Ray was talking about, where you have two transmitters, two antennas, and actually they're basically two separate systems. Then you've got high level combining, where you take a digital transmitter and analog transmitter and take the outputs of those and combine them together. In order to make those play well, you have to go into this combining system, and they have different levels of isolation and therefore different levels of loss. I use a combiner where 90% of my power on the HD side goes away. It just gets generated as waste heat. And it's kind of a brute force way of getting your digital signal to mix with your analog. And so you lose 10% of your analog power going in and 90% of your digital power going in. So it's a very wasteful way to do it, but at the time, the technology really hadn't caught up to where we needed to be at higher power levels. At the time, you couldn't get a transmitter that would do 20 kilowatts of analog and, the combining, the digital along with it. So now that's changed, and you can do that, and that's where a lot of these stations early on, these higher power FMs that had to do these different combining methods, are going to have to go back, and you're looking at essentially a new transmitter to make this happen.
And at the current levels, HD power is 1%. Of the analog power.
So you're going from 1% to 10%.
Well, so if you're putting out 20,000 watts from your transmitter of FM analog power, then you're allowed to do 200 watts, that's 1%, of HD power. And so to get that 200 watts approximately, you're having to put almost 2,000 watts into a 10 dB combiner, and you just get 200 watts.
So to get the 2,000 to get the 10% at 2,000, I would need another 20,000 watts to do it in that method of combining, which isn't going to happen. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah, and with our case in Hartford, I mean, we're putting 7,500 watts out of the transmitter, and with the high level combining we need 7,500 watts of digital.
Right. It's insane.
Are the radio companies going to be willing to spend for new transmitters if they need it for the HD side?
Depends on the company and depends on the circumstances right now with the economy.
In a city like New York City, is it worthwhile to penetrate buildings? Well,
has there been any
a lot of buildings and a lot of people still in them?
Well, there's another step to this too. You don't automatically get you're not automatically just going to get this extra 10 dB. I believe, if I read the rules correctly, I believe you can go to 14 dB without any, just filing the paperwork. And I think if you want to go to 10, isn't there, I think there's another process you have to go through.
You have to do a study because there's a formula they use. And what happens is, it has to do with overlapping contours with the first adjacents and such. And we've already, had this done with our station in Hartford, and we're limited to minus 14.
And then there are the Super Bs, where the grandfathered Class Bs. I have two of them where I can't ever go to that 10% level.
Yeah, we have one or two out in California.
Yeah, I'm limited to 4 or 5%.
Yeah, we're limited at the station in California. I believe the way it's written, it's the higher value of minus 20 or whatever your limit would be at the analog power level you're supposed to be at if you weren't grandfathered.
Right, and actually the FCC has a database lookup too that will tell you if your station falls under that category, and if so, what your permissible HD power level is. So that's on the FCC site.
Sounds like work for your communications lawyer.
Oh, there's a lot of work.
Oh yeah,
just the math.
It's designed to spur the economy.
Right.
Speaking of, remember on a few episodes ago we had a fellow named Peter Smerdon on the show, and he's from Australia. And Peter talked about in Australia they have FM analog service, and they are adopting DAB+. So it's a bit like the DAB that has not gone over so well in Canada, but it has gone over okay in parts of Europe. But this is DAB Plus, so it lets them use a more efficient codec, AAC, and it also lets them transmit other multimedia along with the radio signal. They're also looking at using DRM for more rural reach, you know, rural reach into rural areas of Australia. Well, turns out that our friends the Swiss, for once, have taken sides. The Swiss
doesn't involve an army knife.
The Swiss, at least some of them, are adopting HD radio. That is FMiBach, the system that Ubiquiti has here in the U.S. and is helping to encourage to go into a few other countries as well. So it turned out, I'm reading here from Radio World Online, with DAB well established in Switzerland, so they've already got that there, and DAB Plus services launching there last October, local and regional programmers shortly will begin airing FM IBOC signals, or HD radio. Radio Arjovia, Radio Basel, Capital FM, Radio 24, and Radio Sunshine all plan to start broadcasting with HD radio this September, according to a Swiss media consultant.
I wonder what the penetration of receivers is.
Yeah.
You know what else is interesting I read this week is that Ubiquiti, at least for the short term, has reduced their licensing. They have a deal going on right now on licensing for stations for IBOC.
Well, everything else is on sale. That ought to be, right. That ought to be too.
Well, you know, it makes
sense.
It was
overpriced.
Yeah, it was. And I think this makes a lot of sense to do because we're at a plateau right now, I think, at least domestically on rollouts. And I think something's going to have to give a little bit before we get some more stations up and running.
Mm-hmm.
Then Ubiquiti really has to worry more about receiver penetration here in the United States as well. I went into Best Buy the other day and was looking for an HD radio, and the guy looked at me and goes, "We only have HD TV."
I was in a Fry's and I asked for HD radio and they sent me over to the XM Sirius rack.
Yeah, that's so typical.
And I did find five HD radios. None of them were working.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, none of the FM radios on the shelf were even connected to anything that could receive something.
I mean, it's such a, you know, like, you know, there are a lot of people who hate it, you know, just because of the thought of it or whatever. But, man, everybody I've showed this technology to, they love it. You know, they just love the extra programming, and it just frustrates me when I see, you know, getting shot in the foot like this. You know?
Well, they don't even put receivers in the listening rooms anymore. They only put, like, a CD and DVD-A and all the other stuff in the receiver rooms, in the listening rooms. They don't even put radios in there anymore.
Well, I'd like to see the Ubiquiti folks do a little more lobbying to the consumer outlets like, Best Buy, Fry's.
Do in-store demonstrations.
And say to them, here's why you need to do this, and you can generate revenue, and you bring eyeballs to this particular part of the store. You could also entice them with other things. None of that's taking place. The only people doing that are the XM Siriuses and the HDTV folks.
Ah, yeah.
and Bose with their typical setup they've done for the last 20 years.
Well,
that's my little pet peeve.
If our listeners are interested in HD radio, there is a website that's pretty good about this. It's hdradio.com. Imagine that. And you can find out about receivers for, portable ones for your pocket, your car, whether it's a new car or retrofitting an older car, or your office or home, your boat. Yes, there's a section on boat radios for HD. And you can upgrade your AV system as well. So check out hdradio.com if you're interested in finding out more about that. And they do list Best Buy as a retailer, but, you know, just like other retailers, they don't always, you know, the brightest lights in the harbor aren't always in the sales department.
You know, Kirk, if you remember when stereo was the big thing, they were doing a lot of in-store demos and stuff. Ubiquiti should really look at history and see how they were able to penetrate with stereo receivers and everything back then.
That'll never happen. Nobody does that anymore.
Yeah.
Well, the NAB should be getting a little ticked off and should be going after Ubiquiti and saying, look, you're charging us for this technology. The least you can do is use some of that money to promote it to the people that will listen to you.
Right. Well, you know, the problem is getting these people out to not forget that radio is still relevant. You know, a lot of these guys at the Best Buys and things are very caught up in you know these emerging technologies and stuff. So it's easy to forget. I mean, it really is. If you ask somebody at Best Buy about radio, you know. So yeah, I mean, it's education. It's getting these people to understand that you know there's some really cool cutting edge things going on.
Well, tell you what, how about you take all that money they spent on Radio Now and all that wonderful bizwang marketing they did with those little buttons, and work with the local broadcasters to do a co-op between the local establishments, Ubiquiti, NAB, and educate these folks and have the radio station involved by promoting it.
What a great
idea. So
you
tie it in. And I even suggested that to somebody at several different convention floor meetings, and I got this look like I just stole their firstborn. I was like, they're like, no, you can't do that. It just doesn't work that way. Really? You need to read the book by Seth Godin, and you'll learn a lot about what you should be doing in the business right now.
You know, I've
got folks that call us up at one of my radio stations, the All News station, wanting more about knowing about HD because why? And Tom knows this. We both have high-powered AM stations that do have difficult reception capabilities in many parts of our listening area. And a lot of folks have heard the HD on our sister FM stations in the case of CBS and have heard the HD carrier on our AM. And they're like, wow, I'm in my office. I've got folks calling me from lower Manhattan in their offices saying, I'm listening to the station on this thing they call HD, the thing they call HD radio on their desk. And they're listening to us clear as day.
You know, I got a
handful. Go ahead.
I'm kind of thinking out loud here. I'm wondering if the NAB kind of lack of real push on this, I wonder if that has to do with the fact that HD radio is so polarizing. If you talk to a lot of the smaller stations, they are 100% against it.
Well, it's costing too much.
Right. So I'm wondering if they're not taking a huge stand because they're worried about it not being real popular.
I don't think so, because I talk to the NAB a lot, and as a matter of fact, I was on the phone with David Layer earlier this week, and at the last, I'd say six or seven AES shows, or probably even more, probably closer to the last 15, he has been pushing HD radio and iBox. So
okay.
I think NAB and also CEA is really pushing it. I just think that they're not getting direction from Ubiquiti.
Well, there's a lot not going on. I mean, you can push all you want and tout it. You know what you have to do like they do in the agricultural industry? You need to subsidize it. Those folks who can't afford it, offer up a plan to subsidize it. Ubiquiti should come up with a deal. Let's face it, the licensing fees to pay off, yes, I get it, the research and development and the ability to maintain the staff. But at the same time, NAB should step in and say, you know what, our membership needs to get behind this because of X, and we need to find a way to help the smaller markets who really don't have the income to say, okay, I'm going to put an extra 10% of my profits to a technology that I think is going to work. And, you know, there's nobody else supporting it. And, yeah, you know what, Chris? You're absolutely right. Those are folks out there who are polarized and are just, you know, no way I'm getting involved.
Did you guys see what the statement made by the New Jersey Broadcasters Association?
Hmm.
They put forth a resolution, contacted their congresspeople and everything else because the new regulations do not address any protections outside the protected contour.
Oh, that's correct. That's right.
Yeah, but you don't have any protections outside your protected contour now.
I mean, here's an example. I did a contract job over the weekend for a non-com station that they bought a new transmitter. So as part of that, they just went ahead and bought all of the iBox stuff. None of it's turned on because they couldn't afford the licensing. So, I mean, they can have
it
on tomorrow. Yeah.
There's my point right there.
Yeah.
You know, do a tiered system then. You know, I just, the licensing model in some industries makes no sense. And a lot of those industries have realized it and have changed their ways. Ubiquiti needs to do it. They have to stop this touting of what they claim to be one thing and do another.
Well, the other thing they need to do too is get these get the radios into mainstream cars. Ford has announced they're going to put it in there. That's great. We need Ford. We need Chevy. We need Toyota. Well, once they get their brakes fixed,
and they really
we need it in Hondas and cars like that. We don't need it in a Beamer. We don't need it in Lexus, you know, I mean,
no,
those
you need it in a telephone. You need it in an MP3 player, because if you go into and ask a high school kid what a radio is, he says, "Oh, that's what people used to listen to before iPods and iPhones."
Oh yeah. Well, one of my other pet peeves is with Ubiquiti is they went from being an engineering company, as they called it, you know, when what's his name, Mr. Struble, made his big announcement several years ago, to a marketing company. It's like, hello, anyone home, McFly? You haven't finished the technology development yet. It's not in a portable. It's not battery operated. It's not the same experience that my audience on both FM and AM can right now do. experience. Right. It's like, hello, you market something after you've developed it.
By the way, I've got some news for Mr. Ray. You can get the HD radio standard equipment in the Rolls-Royce Phantom series.
Awesome. Well, I'll rush right out and use your credit card to buy one.
Apparently, it's also in the Scion. What that's mainstream enough.
That's pretty mainstream.
So you discuss a Scion and a Rolls-Royce in the same sentence.
They're on the same page on the HD radio site.
I'll tell you, I mean, that portable, the portable insignia at Best Buy is a great little portable
HD radio. That's a nice little radio, isn't that?
Yeah. Yeah, I love it.
Nobody knows it exists.
It recharges with your USB port.
Yeah.
The antenna is your headphones you have connected to them, to it.
It's got a nice color display on it.
Yeah.
It's a great rate. But Chris hit it on the head though. Nobody knows about it. I mean,
I went into Best Buy and asked the question, can I get an HD portable radio, please? You know, like a Walkman type device or what do you want to call it? And they again took me over to the XM and Sirius table and said, yeah, here you go. No, that's not what I'm looking for. Meanwhile, literally one aisle away, maybe 65 feet. Was the insignia. It's sitting right there in a little display, you know. It's like, I wanted to take a video camera and just like do this entire event. Oh, okay, folks. Ubiquity, NAB, what the devil's going on here? Come on, wake up.
Yeah. I think they get spiffed too by, you know, for selling subscriptions.
Heck yeah, come on, you know that's the way it works.
Oh yeah. And there's no subscription for HD radio, it's free.
Yeah, but if you work the co-op deal with the local broadcaster who can bring in foot traffic, hello. Right. You've just introduced a whole new set of eyeballs to your products in the store. That's what it's all about, isn't it? Otherwise, you're not brick and mortar. You're just an online shop.
Mm-hmm. When's the last time you went into an electronics store and saw, like, a radio station van outside?
When was the last time you saw a radio station van in a strip mall?
when was the last time you saw a radio station that had enough staff to have a van?
Oh, sorry. That's right.
I guessed.
So what does a remote consist of nowadays? Is it an 18-year-old intern with a cell phone?
No, some say it's 21. Yeah, it's a cell phone pretty much, I would say, right? 90% of them?
No, laptop.
A laptop.
We do laptops, yes. We do the laptops with FTP audio and then making
files. We use a Comrex GSM codec, generally.
So what do you guys think about this new product that Tyline has introduced? They've introduced a product they call the Report It Live App and Dock. Now, it's a piece of hardware that your iPhone slips into, and it's got apparently professional XLR connectors for your microphones, and then there's an app that goes on the iPhone. Yes, there's an app for that, that lets you stream live and good-sounding, good-quality audio through the iPhone's 3G or Wi-Fi connection back to the radio station.
It's great if you can get AT&T reception.
Okay. Well, you know, you can't buy iPhones in New York anymore because AT&T won't sell them. Oh, they fixed that, didn't they?
Yeah. So they said. That was the marketing. I think it's nice. It's convenient. It helps those who may not have the savvy to use cell phones with all the other software you can buy. I don't know. Me personally, I don't see it really doing much. You're sort of taking the iPhone, you know, experience and then dumbing it down or making it clunky with this add-on. I just don't see people wanting to do that.
Well, you know, if you do, although look at the Comrex Access, which was just a big PDA with a brick on the back of it. Yeah, those did pretty well.
True. But but those will work on any other platform.
That's true. You're right. You are kind of tied to the either Wi-Fi or AT&T.
Yeah, I should clarify, tying it into a particular product like this, I guess if you're going to use the iPhone as a part of your backbone of this unit, industrial design needs to be a little better. I don't know. I just see people look at this and go, huh? What is this? Anybody who has an iPhone is going to look at this and go, this is crazy.
Well, yeah, but this is a dock. I mean, the iPhone slips into this thing.
Yes, and I'm looking at a picture of it, and it looks like this looks like a military device.
Yeah, it doesn't have. Of course, it was designed by Tyline, not by.
It's the iBrick.
It's like, okay, I'm launching a few tanks with this thing.
Well, but how would you get two XLR connectors and a headphone connector attached to an iPhone?
Oh, there are companies who make adapters that will do this. Matter of fact, like I'm demoing up.
Yeah, dongles, if you want to use the for a better word. I'm looking at a software package right now that uses any Windows mobile enabled phone, and it's software that will work on any cell phone. And they actually have the company's worked with several phone manufacturers to create these little adapters that plug into their, you know, I'll call it a universal port, and it gives me an XLR connector out.
Can you name the company, the software company?
Yeah, the software is Lucy. Lucy, so let me get the actual, there's a place in St. Louis that's the rep in the United States. Matter of fact, it's the same algorithm or similar algorithm that's used in the Comrex box.
Okay.
And then there's also Bluetooth now, too, that you can use to send audio over and encode it as well.
Yes. Yeah. Do you guys have good luck with Bluetooth? I mean, I have rotten luck with Bluetooth.
I've gotten interference.
I've had pretty good success with the Bluetooth. Unfortunately, our news report is because of the environment we go in. Yeah, you do run into the issue of pairing with other people's units. You sort of have to be careful of that.
Hey, now! Hey, get in the subway and pair with that unit.
Yeah.
So you're going to look up the URL, Chris Tobin.
Yes, I'm working on that. Yes, Lucy Live. Lucy Live is the product, and I'll get you the more info.
It's like Lucy Goosey, but it's faster.
Yes.
Lucy Live.
Yeah, Lucy Live, and I'll have the info shortly.
All right, you work on that. You work on that. All right, well, what else is in the news before we turn things over to grilling Mr. Bialik?
Really? We're going to grill him? Oh, no one said that.
Well, I would have brought my barbecue sauce.
I would say, wait a minute, I have a special marinade we could have used. It's a special Aborigine.
I can tell you about the cool thing I found yesterday.
Yes, Tom.
This is just too funny.
That's great.
We all know the term FUBAR, correct?
Yes. Remember, it's a family show.
Yes, and for anybody listening who's maybe been under a rock for a while, the PG version is fouled up beyond all repair.
Yes. Okay.
That's correct.
So, yesterday in the mail comes the latest Stanley Supply and Services catalog, which used to be the Jensen Tool catalog. And I'm sitting here paging through here, and I get to page 129, and I'm on the floor in hysterics, and my wife's looking at me like I'm strange. Well, she does that anyway, but you know. And you can, if you don't believe me that this exists, you can do it yourself. You can go to www.stanleysupplyservices.com. And in the search box, type the word FUBAR. Stanley makes a FUBAR.
What I think is even more exciting, what's more exciting is that it's trademarked.
It's trademarked, and it's called the Extreme FUBAR.
Extreme
FUBAR. Kirk, you're giving him a free ad.
Extreme FUBAR?
Oh, yeah. Actually, they got the URL Stanley FUBAR. Just go to stanleyfubar.com. It'll then redirect to the Stanley.
You know, I gotta believe I've got prior art on Extreme FUBAR. I'm just saying.
I think I'm sure we can find many people with prior art on that one.
Well, somebody sent me a note this morning from the SBE 15 list, because I posted it on the SBE 15 list, and he says, you know, if you got nothing better to do with your time, go to YouTube and type in Stanley FUBAR. You get all these great videos of people destroying pianos and everything else with it.
Oh, boy.
Can you imagine the naming session for this in marketing?
Well, yeah.
Obviously, former military people put this one together.
So do you think at the Stanley Corporation, in the corporate marketing department conference room, do you, imagine the scene, right? So they're having a meeting. Now, which came first, the name or the product?
Better yet, do they have a FUBAR department?
I want to believe that they wanted to just build a FUBAR, and that's what they came up with.
See, that's what I think. They think,
that's what I want to believe, yeah.
We got a crowbar, we got a whatever different kind of bars.
Looks like a hammer, and you know.
I got to imagine it was like the company Christmas party. They were all drunk. You know what would be great? We're going to make a FUBAR! Yeah!
I'm thinking about buying one just for the name. I mean, just so I can have a FUBAR.
It did win the Best of What's New in 2006 with Popular Science.
I love it.
It's the Stanley Fat Max FUBAR, Extreme FUBAR. It's the evil son of the hammer.
Oh, yeah, there it is at PopSci.com.
It has an appetite for destruction because the chicken wire-like backing on my friend's plaster walls was dulling my reciprocating saw blades. This is what I'm reading right off the site.
Yeah, I see it here. Yeah.
They went full tilt. The marketing folks went all out on this one.
Oh, I swear I heard the wood cry out in pain.
Yes!
For all your FUBAR needs, see the folks at Stanley.
Oh, that's classic.
Tom, thank you for that.
I couldn't resist. I mean, this was just too good to pass up, you know.
And remember, when you think of FUBAR, think of Tom Ray.
Hey, most people do.
walk softly and carry a big FUBAR. That's all I got.
Oh, look out for my 18-inch FUBAR. That's what it says right there. My goodness. All right, well, there's your radio engineering tip of the week.
Get yourself a FUBAR.
Yeah, put it on the purchase rack.
Hey, I can think of some people.
Get called into the accounting office. Yeah, what is this FUBAR that you just purchased?
Well, just bear in mind that the official name, the official acronym from the Stanley Corporation for FUBAR actually means Functional Utility Bars.
Right. Oh, okay.
I've been in some of those. Anyway.
It took them 18 months to come up.
I was going to say, that was the second meeting after this. Called the FUBAR. Oh, great. Okay, what does that mean?
You know, it looks like Stanley has at least three versions of this. There's the FatMax Extreme FUBAR utility bar. There's also the Stanley FUBAR Forcible Entry Tool.
Oh, that's a nice one.
Yeah. Well, that'll be popular in New
York. That's for local law enforcement.
And it's available in 18 and 30-inch versions.
Ooh. We've got the Total FUBAR, Complete FUBAR, and
Exploratory FUBAR.
Well, I can think of many better ways to introduce our guest today. Oh, jeez. Ladies and gentlemen, the chairman of Broadcast and Streaming Sessions for the Audio Engineering Society Convention, the one that's coming up also this November 4th through 7th, 2010, at the Moscone Convention Center in San Francisco. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome to the spotlight David Bialik. Hello, David.
Hello. Hey. Quite an honor to follow up FUBAR.
Soon to be an owner of the FatMax Extreme FUBAR.
So David, give us a couple of paragraphs about yourself, and then we'll talk about AES and what you do in there and why it's important.
Well, currently I'm a systems engineering consultant, which is the most generic title I could ever come up with. I was chief engineer and an engineer at many radio stations throughout the 80s and 90s and decided to go out on my own. And I was doing a lot of contracting, and suddenly I realized that my skills were going to be more valued by outside the broadcast industry than inside. So even though I still do a lot of broadcast consulting and streaming consulting, I've also branched out and taken my skills to other industries, like handling their technology, whether it's their computers, their telephony. I've handled any type of technology solution now, and been doing it now for around close to 15 years, just between the two of them, and been independent. So I can tell anybody that there is life after being a radio station engineer.
Okay.
And the beauty is I've given up doing transmitter work, so most of the time I get to sleep at night.
Oh, and you don't have to deal with thousands and thousands of volts anymore. You know, like 5 volts is your limit now?
Basically, it's nice though. Now I'm dealing with a lot of people wanting to set up Wi-Fi and stuff. So now I'm suddenly having to do spectrum analysis and everything again. And I'm like saying, "Gee, everything old is new again."
David, it seems like you and I met when you were doing some consulting work for Playbill.
Right.
This is the magazine that, you know, if you go to a Broadway show in New York, you get handed a Playbill magazine, and they were wanting to build a studio.
Right. They set up what's called Playbill Radio, and I built their streaming studios and set them up. And at the time, Axia was just being released, and one of my good friends in Washington, D.C., Mike Burns over at WETA, said, "Hey, you got to see this stuff." So I went down and saw it. I said, "You're right. This is the easiest way to build a studio." And I think it was like right before Tom had done his. So we built the Axia studio there, and it was great. And put them up on the air, and I did that, and it was a fun project.
And they use that studio for what? For streaming or podcasting? What is it?
They do a little bit of everything there. They have an automation system going through there and everything. They have everything a radio station would have except for a transmitter and a tower.
Okay.
They even have a processing chain. And it sounds good. And they're trying to appeal to an audience that's not being served by the radio stations nowadays.
Ah, okay. People who are interested in behind-the-scenes Broadway plays, Broadway play news?
Well, they play a lot of show tunes and stuff.
Okay, oh, okay. Yeah.
And I've also set up, back in the, I guess it was the early 90s, a couple stations schools came to me, and they were right over in Hudson County, New Jersey, and they said, hey, we want you to find us a license, and we want to build a radio station. I said, okay, you're 3 miles outside of New York City, and you think you're going to get a frequency.
Wow.
So we went back and forth for, I guess, was around 6 months, and the internet was just coming into its own at that time. Windows 3.1 was still out and stuff like that, and Real Audio was like in beta. And I said, hey, why don't you stream over the internet? And everyone looked at me like I was a nut. They said, who's ever going to listen to audio over the internet? So right now, they now have two streaming facilities there, and we're actually talking about a third one. One studio is totally analog, while the other one has a digital console. And hopefully the third one will have an IP studio, and we're going to hopefully renovate the other two to be IP.
Cool.
So that's a fun project that I've been working on, and it's kind of sad, but it's nice when you end up rebuilding stuff that you did back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I mean, some of the equipment there, I say, yeah, this equipment's older than my kids, so you know. doing a lot of telephony, doing a lot of planning and consulting. I've done a lot of work right now overseas, and it's an interesting project I'm working on at night, where clients are calling me up and I'm basically helping them with plans and stuff, but I have no hope of ever seeing the project because there's one in Switzerland I'm working on and one in China. And there, so the time difference is awful, so I'm sitting up at night discussing this and working on plans and stuff with them, and I'm sort of being the Sherlock Holmes of these plans because I'm an armchair engineer now.
Well, maybe with video Skype you could actually get to see them, or of course they can take pictures. But yeah, I understand what that is like, consulting with someone half a world away and just working to imagine.
Yes, but I don't have Kirk Harnack's frequent flyer miles.
David, tell us about AES. Now, that means the Audio Engineering
The Audio Engineering Society. We're a little over 60 years old now. It's a worldwide organization. For the last 22 years, I've been putting together broadcast sessions. And as Chris Tobin could tell you, when I get involved in planning a session, I sort of go overboard. And
quite zealous.
I really enjoy it. And if I could make this my full-time job, I would, because I enjoy putting together sessions and spreading the education and trying to make it, my goal is to make the AES a broadcast destination, and I think I have. We have, close to between 16 and 18 sessions every year, and I plan that all the sessions run in a line, so there's never any conflicts. So if people want to come just for the broadcasting sessions, no one can miss them because they're all right after each other.
Consecutive.
Consecutive. Yes.
Consecutive. Yes.
And we,
right. It's not,
we
that's tried a, to, we very, tried very to much touch. Like Tom Ray's probation sentences. They're,
yes.
They run consecutively.
We try to touch topics that other people haven't, or I feel that are neglected because of whatever reason. And I also take suggestions, and I want to open up to all your listeners that I want suggestions for topics for the AES convention. Whether you plan to come or not, you can send them to broadcast@aes.org, and I will look at every single one of them, and you have my word on that. And that's how I form the sessions. Like, I was talking in a bar last year with someone saying, hey, you know, there's never been a session about audio for news gathering. And I said, you know, you're right. There's always stuff about audio for sports, but news gathering has its own quirks. So I was talking with Skip Peasy, who you've had on the show in the past, and I said, hey, Skip, you and I met back when you were at NPR. You used to deal with this all the time. I want you to chair this session, and let's work together on getting some great people for it. And my first suggestion was for him to speak to Chris Tobin, and he nailed Chris and got him on the show. And it was probably one of the better sessions of the last convention. And between what Chris had to say and that guy from the BBC, it was phenomenal.
Yeah, actually, we talked about that afterwards, and it was interesting. We both had similar paths that we were following as far as the technologies for our respective news operations.
Yeah, except the BBC had government funding, and you should have seen some of the stuff they were pulling out, their special news vehicles and things. I almost expected to see a bat cave.
it was pretty wild, some of the stuff they did talk about.
But the AES has always been ever since I've been doing it, has been on the front line of broadcast technology. We were the first ones to discuss digital audio broadcasting back when we did it as a local section meeting jointly with the SBE back when Chris and I planned it. Chris might remember when NAB was pushing the Eureka system.
And oh, yes.
We caused enough of a stir that at one SBE meeting, I think we had more station owners than we did engineers there. And
that, we did.
Right after that meeting, NAB backed off of Eureka. And in all honesty, Ubiquiti has a lot, owes us a lot for that.
Yeah, that was, I thought for sure we were going to be arrested or, you know, something was going to be very bad.
Certain people still will not talk to me because of that. But we've been doing it now for a long time. The AES broadcast sessions are exciting. There's a lot of stuff there that you might not have heard of before that you'll walk away saying, oh, wow. And I can honestly say that I sit through every single session, and there is not a session I don't want to go to, and there is not a session that I put together that I wouldn't find interesting. We've had sessions on sound effects and Foley, which is a phenomenal lost art, and there are people there that teach you how to do it. One time I said, hey, let's put on a show, and everyone at the AES looked at me nuts, and I said, I want to get Hyman Brown to put on a radio drama at the AES to show the power of spoken word and how on radio drama.
Now, that's a name that's a bit familiar. Wasn't he involved with the CBS Radio Mystery Theater?
Yes, he was. And before that, Inner Sanctum, we put on a whole production. Dave Saviot came down and did the sound effects for him from CBS, and he brought in a full cast. It was phenomenal. We did, for the 70th anniversary of FM, we brought in a lot of Armstrong's colleagues, people that worked with him. And not only that, we broadcast it over the Alpine Tower, utilizing a digital T1. Herb Squire and I put together a whole broadcast chain for that.
That broadcast for everyone was done on the original frequency of Major Armstrong's FM broadcast.
And it's a pretty transmitter they have up there for that,
yes,
too.
Yes, Steve Hempel built a transmitter and led that session. This last convention, we did the history of RCA. And that is the first time a session that I've planned has gone over schedule. It was supposed to be an hour and a half, and I think it went 3.5 hours. And it was very funny because everyone that came in to signal me to wrap it up said, hold on a second, this is interesting. And suddenly there were more people coming in to close the meeting, but they were all sitting down listening to what was said.
Yeah, that's not the reaction I get when I do one of those sessions. That's really funny.
We did a great session on codecs where Steve Church spoke, and we had all the major manufacturers. Because at NAB you have a lot of show and flash, and you're basically their sessions there are basically commercials and so forth for the products. At AES, we're talking about the technology and the technique, and we try to keep it to that. Frank Foti has talked about audio processing there, and sitting right next to him would be Marv Caesar and Bob Orban, and you don't get that normally. And sometimes they're agreeing, sometimes they're not. And it's an actual live discussion. And a lot of times the panelists can ask questions of one another, which is always good. And it's not a competitive arena. Yeah, there is an exhibit floor, and yeah, that's where they're going to try and sell you everything. But they keep the technical sessions separate, and if you go to an AES session, you can really program, you can really come out with a lot of benefits out of it. And this last convention, I teamed up with the SBE, and I got them to do something that they've never done before. They gave certification exams to people that registered on site. I don't think they've ever done that at an NAB. Tom, you might correct me.
I don't think they have.
Yeah, and considering that we only had a month to plan for that, I thought they had a pretty good turnout for only a month of PR. And I'm hoping to expand the relationship with SBE. This year we're going to be in California. Next year we'll be back in New York. And I encourage everyone, again, email me at broadcast@aes.org. And if you want to see the website for the convention, you can go to www.aes.org/events/129.
Okay. And I've got these in the show notes, both that email address, broadcast@aes, and the website you just mentioned.
And right now, that's all that's up there. There's a call for papers if anyone would like to present. In the audio industry, I don't think there's anything higher than being published or present at the AES convention.
Right. You've got to be on top of your game.
And we're working right now with the historical section to put together some of the sessions of the past and actually put them on CDs or podcasts, such as the 70th anniversary of FM. I'm also talking to them about, Chris, I don't know if you were there when we did the, rebuilding of New York after 9/11.
Yes, yes.
That was probably the most phenomenal session, and probably the session I'm most proud of is that we did that, because we had everybody involved that had the station.
You walked away. Anyone who's attended, you walked away with knowledge that I don't think you could find in a book, e-reader, anywhere. I mean, it was the best.
And unfortunately, except for broadcasters, the loss in the broadcast industry of those people it's really sad that they're not getting more recognition. I mean, people literally gave their lives to turn down their transmitters.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, Kirk, you can follow that. I had to follow FUBAR.
Well, David, these things you mentioned are on the website. And I would encourage you, if you're interested in the in audio, well, the Audio Engineering Society, it doesn't cost a whole lot to join. What are the dues? Are they $50, $60 a year? Something
like that? Well, there's different scales if you're a student or a full member or if you're an associate. But you can go to aes.org. Mm-hmm. We have section meetings, just like SBE. In New York, we have meetings once a month, and sometimes we even do joint meetings with SBE. Mm-hmm. This month in New York, they're doing a presentation about Folkways Records. Last month, we did something on the 75th anniversary of FM. And the month before that, I did a presentation on streaming and how to choose how to set up streaming and the caching and deciding what type of service you need and so forth.
You go to the AES website at aes.org. You could get information on the convention coming up in November in San Francisco. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be able to go to that, actually. You can also subscribe to AES Tech News, and from the website you can join the AES or at least apply to join the AES.
If anyone wants to see what we did last year at the convention, you can go to aesbroadcast.com because that website has not been updated yet for this year.
Okay.
So it is, so you can see the full section, full program of the broadcast sessions.
So, and once again, David is looking for your ideas, our audience's ideas for session topics. He's in charge of the broadcast and streaming sessions. Coming up at this next AES convention. So the address is broadcast@aes.org, and David Bialik will get that email and take your ideas.
And thank you. I hope I wasn't too commercial.
Nah, we intended it that way. All right. Hey, guys, we're out of time, actually. We've gone an hour, and thank you all for being here. Remember, starting next week on Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 7 Central, 6 Mountain, and 5 Pacific. You can see our shining faces at live.twit.tv, and we'll be doing the show. And by the way, when we do it then, we got to be on time because the television clock waits for no one.
So am I.
All right, let's run around the horn. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Tom Ray, thank you for joining in this time, and thank you for the FUBAR.
Well, thank you for having me, and, you know, next time we'll talk about Snafu.
And the man who always adds class to the show, Chris Tobin. Thank you, Chris, for being here.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
And then the guy who always adds a barrel of laughs, it's Chris Tarr.
Thank you very much.
Well, we're glad you're here, and we'll get to see your shining face next week, I suppose. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you guys can't wait.
David, thank you.
Just wait till you see my shirt. That's all I'm going to
say. Wear my sunglasses. Wait till you see
my shirt. Sure. If it was Friday, we could have Hawaiian shirt day.
As long as we don't have a no-shirt day.
That's for the summer shows.
David, thanks for joining us and telling us a little bit about your Axie experiences. I appreciate that. And also about the upcoming AES. We'll have you on again either before or during that AES. Maybe we'll do a live This Week in Radio Tech from the Moscone Convention Center. That would be fun.
Yeah. You're more than welcome to. I'll make sure to plan it.
Well, thanks all everybody for joining us. And remember, you can download the show on the website, thisweekinradiotech.com. You can also subscribe to it on iTunes. Just go to iTunes, the iTunes store, and do a search for TWRT. There's a couple of them on there. Look for ours. I think it'll be obvious. And subscribe yourself to that. We get most of our listeners downloading the podcast via iTunes, either on the Windows platform or on the Mac platform. Also want to say a big shout out to people from all over the world who are listening to us. People in Hong Kong, also in mainland China, they're listening to us, in Ireland, in Germany, in India, South Africa, England, Canada, Mexico, the U.S., and Brazil. I know those are just a few of the countries that are enjoying the podcast or at least putting up with it. So thank you so much. And join us again next week for another This Week in Radio Tech.
That's all the bandwidth we can pill for this week. Another TWRT has propagated, and all the transmitters and audio equipment live happily ever after, thanks to the handsome engineer and his kind, benevolent care.
We'll be back next week.
Lord willing and the creek don't rise.
This week in Radio Tech.
Subscribe to iTunes and you'll never miss a show.
Search for This Week in Radio Tech in the iTunes store.
Soliciting is strictly encouraged.
If you like today's show, tell a friend. If you didn't like it, we were never here.
Kirk Harnack's wardrobe provided by the Salvation Army and the Red Cross Disaster Relief Services. Hair and makeup provided by Penny LePay Garcia Hernandez Weinberg.
He's unique, wouldn't you say?
I just want to get it over with.
This ends this transmission.
Tango, Whiskey, India, Romeo, Tango.
Signing off. Okay.